I think we've pushed security onto the end user for so long and said, well, how stupid are you to click on such a link? But I also think we have a responsibility as manufacturers, as a society, to ensure technology isn't such that you can blow up an entire company with one click. I believe that we are currently in a situation where we are experiencing someone in the White House making very erratic decisions, and we would be well advised to reopen the debate on digital sovereignty, especially in terms of security.
And I see this time and again when people say, I've been hacked, or I'm now a victim of a cyber attack. You weren't hacked, but maybe you just had a simple password and so on.
Welcome to Cybersecurity Shall Be C-Level Priority, the podcast that puts the digital world to the test. Cyber attacks are on the rise, and data is the most valuable asset in today's world. But how can we protect what matters most to us? Drawing on the latest insights, effective strategies, and practical tools, we'll show you how to create a more secure digital environment. Because one thing is clear, security isn't negotiable, it's a top priority.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of Cybersecurity Executive Matter, the podcast today with Johannes. Hi, Johannes.
Hi, Nico. Thank you very much for the invitation.
We already had a little chuckle beforehand. Actually, we could have written a book about the podcast and the invitation process because there were always a few challenges. That's why I'm even more pleased that it worked out today, both with your schedule, my schedule, and hopefully without any technical problems. We'll see at the end. If you're listening to this episode now, everything went well. But before we start, maybe for everyone who doesn't know you yet, tell us a few sentences about yourself.
Sure. I'm also glad that we're here, and I hope, fingers crossed, that we make it to the end without any problems. Yes, I'm Johannes. I lead the Tagesspiegel background, the editorial team behind the briefings for digitalization and AI smart city and cybersecurity. Three professional briefings, two weekly ones on cybersecurity and smart city, and the daily version on digitalization and AI. I've been involved for almost 4 years now, and therefore I'm very active in the regulatory environment, the technological environment regarding trends and research at a very high level through our readership and with a great team with many smart people from whom I can always learn a lot.
We have an exciting topic today as we want to talk about the term fake news. Although for me, fake news might not be the right term because in the past it has also been used for other things from which we both certainly want to clearly distance ourselves. What I'm somewhat concerned with is both deliberate misinformation and the situation where someone has been hacked and then this and that has happened. Why do you think we, especially here in Germany, repeatedly have the problem with such topics, that reporting is not always objective, particularly in relation to what has really happened, both technically and otherwise? Are these sometimes really misinformation that technically cannot work or that didn't happen at all?
Yes, I believe that on one hand, it's simply a very, very complex topic, and I don't want to exclude myself from that. I think thoroughly understanding the topic repeatedly requires a lot of precision, a lot of concentration, and also the connection to the right experts at that point. That must also be said, because they can always assess very, very well what has actually just happened. I think what sometimes trips us up a bit is also the fast-paced nature of information that simply exists. So, for example, when the media reports a cyber attack on the German police, it initially sounds extremely serious, but it was only a DDoS attack, just a DDoS attack on a website, and then maybe you can't report your bicycle as stolen for about 20 minutes. That's obviously annoying, but it's not life-threatening. But it creates a feeling of how vulnerable our society actually is, and I believe that accuracy is simply very important in reporting on cyber incidents. And I think it's just a motivation for every journalist to always adhere to it very precisely. On the other hand, perhaps to set up the secondary performance on the other side again, it is, of course, also a field that is deliberately spread. I mean, we saw this at the beginning of October 7th when Hamas attacked Israel. There were also an incredible number of reports about cyber attacks and, of course, terrorists and terrorist organizations or state actors who want to harm us also use disinformation to spread insecurity. And in this respect, I believe it is very important to understand that cybersecurity and information security are somehow connected.
I think you took a classic example. I'll bring up this pager example again, especially with Hezbollah. There was immediately talk of, oh, that was a cyber attack. And I believe what I keep seeing in the news is this tendency to focus on this one topic, because it is also very complex. For me, the question is always, let's take the example topic again. What was the cyber attack? Was the cyber attack that they now had access to the pages and then, as it was initially reported, made the battery explode? From the beginning, I said that this couldn't really be the case, because if you look at the images in relation to how big a battery in a pager is, then it's rather unrealistic. Or the other point is, if you say, okay, it was a cyber attack because there was some form of explosive in the pager and it was triggered that way. I think I always see this issue of complexity here as well. So how complex is this matter, and how does one media outlet or another try to present it in a way that everyone can understand? And I think that this is not always intentional, but rather sometimes unconscious, that one tries to simplify it for the sake of, let's say, simplicity, but then the matter is not accurately represented, or some things are neglected in order to explain it to the general public instead of really looking at what actually happened. Because cyber is not just black and white. There are many things to consider, and I see this time and again when people say, I've been hacked, or I'm now a victim of a cyber attack. And when you then question it, you find out, no, you weren't hacked, but maybe you just had a simple password and so on. I also believe that this is partly because the issue is very complex, and therefore it always has to be somewhat simplified for the benefit of the media consumer, so to speak.
Yes, that's definitely true. I believe that there are many excellent investigative journalists in German media houses who put an incredible amount of effort into clarifying and uncovering things that happen in this area. I have the utmost respect for that, and I believe at the same time, it means that everyone involved in media has a responsibility to handle such topics very consciously, simply to take the dissemination of information and clarification, which I believe is our duty, very seriously. I think we also need to become aware that we are in an information environment where, as seen again after October 7th, there was a flood of misinformation occurring in the networks we all use. I mean, it was the European Union that pointed out the flood of misinformation, and maintaining clear information in such an environment is incredibly difficult, I believe. And we definitely need to improve in that area.
Do you also see it a bit like I do, where I often criticize this fear-mongering, like another hack has happened or the next municipality has been attacked? Do you think that's still effective?
That's a good question. I always find it a bit like, when does it wear off? So don't you eventually get used to it? I mean, how many wake-up calls is it now before you eventually think, well, it happens anyway? But I also believe that the task is to talk about such things in a factual and informed manner. And I think regarding what you just said about the password, the task is to see what are highly complex APT attacks that sneak through backdoors into telecommunications networks. And when is it simply a case of someone not having done their homework? So I think we also need to differentiate that. And I believe it's important to clearly state that sometimes the information doesn't go in the right direction, and we need to make distinctions.
What I always say about this is that we need to stop treating people as if they're stupid or incapable, presenting it in a way that suggests, hey, you can't understand this anyway. For years, I've been advocating for involving colleagues when something like this happens, explaining to them what's going on so that understanding can be developed. If we keep going in and saying, Ian, you won't understand this anyway, it's not your issue, or showing this so-called perfect world by perhaps unconsciously or consciously spreading fake news, like saying there was another cyber attack just to alert the next person, I believe that's the wrong approach. We need to focus on implementing this mindset change in people's minds And we can achieve that by providing them with the necessary information they need to understand. Whether it's a complex topic like an app, as you mentioned as an example, or the difference between a hacker attack and having a password that's too simple, allowing someone to log into my account.
What is important is that we learn to talk about this topic in general. It's also clear that for many companies, being affected by a cyber attack is extremely uncomfortable. But what I often notice is, let's say, the poor preparation also communicatively for these incidents. So it often seems like there was no expectation that something like this could happen. And I sometimes think, well, I had the privilege as a journalist to speak with affected business owners, and I always found it very brave when they did so. I also always felt that they had an interest in doing this so that it wouldn't happen to others, or so that others might not make the same mistakes, Bates's, that happened to them. But for that, you have to talk about it. And if business is a SAM, and I believe you need to have exactly this approach of not saying, this is too complicated for you, but rather, I really want to include everyone, and I want people to understand what happened.
You're touching on an important point for me, which I always refer to as the best, because it's often used incorrectly. This lessons learned topic is super important, not just to talk about what happened, but also how it was handled. There are also absolutely positive examples for me. Those who have really led the way, who have reported on it, who have said what happened there. I can also understand the companies to some extent. They naturally face the challenge that if they inform too much, they might get the biggest backlash because something happened. If they inform too little and have to provide information later, then there's the problem again where everyone says, well, you could have known beforehand. For me, the problem is that there's no black and white on how to do it right. I believe the most important thing is to communicate, to start communicating, to see what I can already communicate is absolutely the right way. But then also, as you mentioned, to take along and say, how did I get there? What were my decisions? How does the whole thing continue? And also to think about what the right way is. Then, when talking about news, it is often the case for me that companies assess the power of social media quite differently or not at all. They do not harness this power at all. An email is always sent out or a press release is posted on the website, but that doesn't reach people nearly as well as if I have, I don't know, an Instagram account or a LinkedIn profile where I can reach a completely different target audience. Also, where I can inform more people at once in a more targeted way.
100. And I think it starts very early. You have to think about it at the beginning, so it's most before it happens. You really need to consider what to do when the time comes. So what are the channels that will still work? I once heard a story from someone who went into a company and asked, well, where is your emergency plan? And then the person affected said, well, it's on my, but now I can't access it anymore. So this is exactly about really thinking through in a structured way what actually happens in an emergency. What are the channels through which I need to communicate? I think that's just such an important thing. And also, who do I need to involve and how do I need to involve them? I think there are a few examples of entrepreneurs who have taken this on as a task and go to many conferences to talk about it and so on. That doesn't have to be the right path for everyone. But I find it valuable for the public debate to maybe take it a bit away from all this hype or from all these confusing aspects when people do it.
Do you also see that interest in cybersecurity has increased for you?
Well, we write for a very niche target group as a B2B medium, or if you will, B-politics and public affairs, meaning the public sector. That's why I would say the interest there has, I believe, always been significant. I can really only describe anecdotal evidence from my circle of friends. Let's say the interest in my job has increased over the past 2 years, simply because many people have now become aware that there are vulnerabilities and points of attack that perhaps weren't seen for a long time or weren't given much attention.
I find that quite exciting. You can see it a bit too, as you mentioned, in your circle of friends. When the topic comes up, what do you actually do? And the word cybersecurity comes up and you first have to try to explain, okay, what does cybersecurity even mean? That's usually where it starts.
Yes, that's true. And I must say, I'm not a technician, I'm a humanities scholar who ended up in journalism and discovered cybersecurity for myself. And I also noticed that there are indeed other approaches besides just the technical one. There might be an organizational, a communicative, a strategic, maybe even a philosophical and a psychological approach to consider. And capturing these many approaches and then discussing them, I believe, makes the topic so exciting, but sometimes also difficult to describe.
Absolutely. I encounter that repeatedly. Especially, as I've mentioned a few times in the podcast, for example, explaining to children what your job is always quite exciting, and it also shows me the complexity that still exists in many minds about what cybersecurity actually means. But maybe to come back to the topic, we talked about how there are fake news, so to speak, in various forms and ways, and that sometimes it has to do with the fact that it's simply too complex and not well understood. On the other hand, there are also fake news due to insufficient research, which then gets clarified. But we also talked about how fake news can be used for disinformation, especially in areas such as where hacker and or APT groups deliberately process information or deliberately share information to, for example, conduct phishing or a social engineering attack. Do you currently see an increase in that? So do you think it has increased that we need to be more careful? Whom can we trust? I find that such a harsh word because it encompasses a lot. But should we verify more before we read something?
I think what we are seeing and what I find very clever is that I believe 2 years ago, NISA teamed up with the European External Action Service and together they described what it is that we are actually looking at. And they deliberately did not use the word fake news or disinformation, but rather speak of foreign information manipulation and interference. I think that fits quite well because it broadens the scope and looked at what both sides can learn from each other. So what can cybersecurity experts learn from people who deal with disinformation? And I believe that we actually see the key here to addressing this phenomenon, which I think becomes extremely relevant, especially in times, I don't want to say it for the thousandth time, but in times of AI and AI-generated content, to be able to evaluate information and not fall for it. I believe this interdisciplinarity is really a key here because I think it will become more important and it will keep getting worse. And me, you can't blame the AI for that. But I believe the means have simply changed. And as we have already discussed, the flood of information has simply become different. And to ignore what is right and what is wrong, and to develop strategies against it, and to filter out what is false and what is true, and also to develop strategies against it or to raise awareness among people, you can't get far with technology alone.
Yes, I also think you addressed an important point. That's the point that applies to all areas. With AI, we see a completely different level. Before, you might have been able to easily verify it through poor research or through texts that were written accordingly, or even through a simple fact check. I also believe that for you, especially now, it will be increasingly difficult in the future to really verify the facts and to check, for example, to deepfakes. Who even says that the photo is still correct or that it is no longer correct? I find it really super difficult, even in the future, to see how you can trust the media or how you can trust the medium. And for me, the only option is, and I do this now as well, to simply engage with multiple media or look at multiple media and then form your own opinion in the end and not just be dependent on one medium. I think this is also a bit of a topic, especially when we look at fake news in terms of cybersecurity, to perhaps consider whether to include something like the Tagesspiegel background or another format, so to speak, to gather more information from the classic formats, as I would call them, like all public broadcasting, if you want to have it, or you might say, hey, that's enough for me as it is. That's always a personal opinion. How much information do I want to receive to understand it?
I think the major media outlets are doing a very good job with all these things. I think it's always a bit of a question of how deep you want to dive in. There are also many sites like Heise or Golem that prepare a lot of information and delve deeply into research. I think it's always about how much information you need. And I think you always have to focus a bit on that So what information, what depth do I actually need and is enough for me? I believe that the diversity of media is crucial here simply because you can't be an expert on every topic. And that's why we also need specialized media. And I think what's also relevant is that we need to talk about mechanisms, including technical possibilities, to determine quality and whether an image is genuine. We need to talk about this, especially when it comes to the field of OSINT, when it involves photos that serve as evidence. For example, we remember Bucha or the attacks in the south of Israel on the kibbutzim, that these photos are important to understand what is happening. But we also need to reach a point where no one can say, no, that's all fake. Rather, we need to be able to prove that things are real, because otherwise, and this is quite interesting, there's this liar's dividend. You can always claim now that it's fake, that it's faked. And in case of doubt, the quality of forgery is improving. And there, I think we need to have technical means to prove that photos are real so that we can continue to document these horrors when they occur.
I find that an interesting approach because, on the other hand, we can then talk about SEO trust, which is also the next buzzword being thrown around. You just mentioned an important point, and I find it super interesting because I'm not very deep into it myself. Are there already for you, meaning media houses or journalists, any tools available to, in quotes, check whether something is valid or not?
There are indeed initiatives. I think it's called CPA, where Adobe and the BBC are involved, aiming to create an immutable tag indicating where and by whom an image was taken. I believe this is particularly important for war reporting, but it's also very relevant when documenting human rights violations, as we discussed. I believe a lot is happening in this area, and it's increasingly understood that this is a topic we need to address.
When we talk about tools that support you in your work, especially in the context of cybersecurity, it's often the case that many rely on the approach of technology. That's also what I always preach. People, it's not just about technology, it's also important to focus on people and processes within the company's content context, not just technology. How do you perceive this in your environment and in the editorial team? Is there still more talk about technology, or has it been understood that cybersecurity requires a holistic approach?
I think this is a topic that can really get me worked up. I'm allowed to express my personal opinion here on the podcast, so I'm here primarily as Johannes and can certainly comment. I think we're really bad at this topic. I mean, bad as a global society as a whole. I think we've pushed security onto the end user for so long and said, well, how stupid are you to click on such a link? How can it be that you don't do the updates? Yes, I get it. Everyone also has a personal responsibility, but I also think we have a responsibility as manufacturers, as a society, to ensure that technology isn't such that you can blow up an entire company with one click. That's just wrong.
Yes, then. The balance between usability and security is not there at all.
Yes, so I once heard an example from a manager about security in hospitals there, and I found it such a memorable example. There is this computer that is in the nursing room, and nurses have to use it, doctors have to use it, and actually you should change the password every day, which you do, but you end up sticking the password on a post-it note on top, because who is supposed to remember a password every day when you're saving lives and caring for people? So for me, this is a symbol of how technology functions in a way that's unfriendly to people, and how security is also unfriendly to people because it's not user-centered. If a phone worked like that, no one would buy it, to be honest. But when it comes to security, I think we always take a super uncomplex, overly complex path where we slowly have to ask ourselves. And that's why I find, for example, something like the Cyber Resilience Act is a good thing, where we have to think, okay, let's also make sure that the responsibility doesn't just lie with the user, but also with the person or where it originates, namely with the products.
That's a super exciting topic. What would you personally wish for, speaking from your personal opinion, what should we do differently? Because I also see an additional issue. You mentioned the topic that manufacturers need to stand up and take responsibility. I also see a bit of a problem that we are making ourselves dependent, especially in Europe, particularly with technology, on other countries. So not only in the cybersecurity field, but now also specifically in the cybersecurity field. we are totally dependent on other manufacturers that do not come from Europe, which are integrated into our systems, and I don't see that as the problem either. I don't want to start the Huawei debate now because I also think it was communicated incorrectly back then, in my personal opinion. I just want to say that we need to ensure that when we have such critical or important topics, we should consider whether we should introduce or develop something ourselves. And I know there are many good German companies. I don't want to bash them all, but if you look at the market share compared to the American and Chinese market share, it is relatively small.
Yes, so let me say one thing. What I would like to see is, I think the Cyber Resilience Act is really on a good path because it states that if something enters the European market, security by design is mandatory. And I really have to say that. I know many people are annoyed by the many regulations, and I also believe that a lot has gone wrong. But I think that this thing, I mean, you also sell a car on the European market according to certain standards and norms. And I believe that we need these standards in cybersecurity as well, and that they are important. And I believe we, as the European market, can also present ourselves confidently. Having that said, I think European self-confidence is simply important in this area of digital sovereignty as well. And I believe that is progressing. We have a few companies in Germany and Europe that can indeed build good solutions. They just need to be in demand. You need to have the willingness to say, I choose the European option. And that doesn't mean setting up autonomously and somehow kicking everyone else out, but rather saying, okay, maybe I'll first look for a European option. And if that doesn't exist, then maybe I'll consider an American one. It doesn't have to be that way, but I believe that we are currently in a situation where we are experiencing someone in the White House making very erratic decisions. And we would be well advised to reopen the debate on digital sovereignty, especially in terms of security, and to reassess where we actually stand right now.
Yes, you're addressing an important topic. One aspect is the USA, and another for me is the South China Sea, especially with Taiwan, for example. The chip manufacturing there has a huge impact on us, which we don't really see because it seems so far away. I recently had a recording with Robert where we discussed geopolitical crises, and we talked about this topic specifically because he asked me, Nico, how do you see it? What is the coverage of this topic like in Europe? In America, I currently don't read anything about it. What does it look like in Europe? And I see again, yes, it was in the press, especially when the attacks by the Chinese Navy on the local Navy on the other side increased. At the end of the day, I think it's always a sensational topic. Something happens now, but in the long term, I don't really see the focus on it yet. But I see the effect for us if the situation there really escalates further. For example, if there are problems with Taiwan, one of the largest chip producers, that it will inevitably also impact us.
Yes, so I believe that the conflict hotspots in the world are not decreasing. I think the big challenge here for media professionals and analysts is that there is just an overwhelming amount happening right now. So much is happening that you really have to focus on one thing, otherwise you completely lose track. I noticed this personally myself. Sometimes I also feel worn out by all the information bombarding me, and I can't manage to keep track of all the topics. And that's why it's all the more important to focus on one thing, because the strategy on the other side, I'm not pointing in any direction, is to throw so many topics into orbit that you feel exactly this overwhelm and can't keep up to critically question things. Let's take a step-by-step look at what's actually happening.
Do you also see that this topic, I'll call it fake news again, in any way has an influence on politics?
Well, I believe that politics itself, and I have great confidence in this, is very aware of the realistic dangers that exist. And I also believe, at least from what we have experienced so far, at least on, let's say, the side of the political spectrum that does not exploit people's fears for capital. So it's already a very factual debate about the topic. I believe that there are naturally always points of contention, be it hackbacks or vulnerability management. There can be different opinions on that, which I don't have to share, but I find the debate about it important, and I don't think it's a debate conducted with deceit or oversimplification.
You just mentioned hackback, which I also talked about recently. I also find that this topic of debate is simply super important. We need to discuss such topics and not always accept whether it's solution one or solution two. Especially in the field of cybersecurity, where the world changes by the second, I find this exchange, which you also mentioned at the beginning, super important. And the debate about what can be done and what cannot be done is also evident in the example when there is another parliamentary hearing on the topic of NIS2, with so many experts being summoned. You can also see how high the interest is at the end of the day. Whether something is actually implemented or not, everyone has to decide for themselves again. But fundamentally, you can see that something is happening.
Yes, 100%. And I believe that this topic of perspective, I don't have to share every opinion. I don't have to have exactly the same view on everything. But that's what this debate thrives on. And I don't want to open up the big picture now, but being able to tolerate a different opinion, as long as it stays within the bounds of a democratic framework and within an acceptable framework that is argued factually, I find especially in the field of cybersecurity. Let's listen. Let's also learn from each other, because I don't want to rule out the possibility that my opinion might change in a year. And I hope that I have this opportunity by working with smart people, listening to smart people, that if I ever feel that maybe my opinion wasn't so good, I can then change that opinion and say so without having to hear, oh yes, they knew that, you should have known that beforehand. So this willingness to interact with each other, to talk to each other, to learn from each other, and also to admit when you've taken a wrong turn somewhere, I find not only valuable for cybersecurity, but especially in this field, extremely valuable.
Now, perhaps for me, the last question, how do you see the issue of holding social media platforms accountable, especially for the dissemination and evaluation of information? It's also always a frequent discussion. One side says we need freedom of the press or freedom of speech. The other side says no, they must intervene. What do you personally think is part of the solution to perhaps move away from fake news or disinformation that such platforms need to, let's say, censor more? Censoring is also a harsh word, but I think you know what I mean.
Yes, good question. So I think what J.D. Vance said in Munich is an outrageous impertinence, and I also find it dangerous. I find the backtracking of these corporations in the USA to offer themselves up like that, I personally find it a disaster. Because I think that what we... I believe it's not so simple to, yes, it's just digital and we don't know. So it doesn't have real effects, right? I believe that if you are often confronted with something, with disinformation, with information manipulation, then it's not necessarily that you can prove exactly that this has now radicalized me or this has now convinced me of this or that. But this constant bombardment, I personally believe, does something to a person. And I believe that platforms also have a responsibility to see what is happening with us. I am not convinced that unpleasant political opinions should be suppressed, but I believe there are things that are not acceptable and should not happen. And I think we can see where it can lead right now with X. I think the debate is completely over, actually. And honestly, I have to say, I don't want to operate in such an environment.
Absolutely. I can understand that. I also left X quite quickly back then because I told myself the discussion that takes place there is no longer happening at all. And with everything that's happening there, or I personally was no longer in favor of it. And I also believe that this is always, in quotes, the guideline you have to consider. What do I stand for? What are my values? And to regularly question them, how do I deal with that? But Johannes, I was very pleased that you shared your personal opinion so openly. I think it's a super difficult topic. Oh, especially because many terms, whether it's fake news, are always instrumentalized for other areas that we do not support. Today, the main topic was, what can fake news mean for cybersecurity? And above all, what disinformation can mean for cybersecurity? I believe we have gained some exciting insights here. For everyone who wants to learn more from you, I can highly recommend the Tagesspiegel background. I am also diligently involved in checking it out. I always find it great that you sometimes bring a different perspective. As we have already said, not always. Going the way, in quotes, that mainstream media might take, but sometimes delving a bit deeper, approaching it a bit differently, because that's also what I personally always do, gathering multiple opinions and then forming an image with these multiple opinions. Therefore, I thank you for being with us today. And that was it for this episode of Cybersecurity Chef Sash. We'll see and hear each other next time. Until then.
I also want to say thank you. Thank you. Goodbye. I am honored that you played this small advertisement block for us. As mentioned, specialized information has the great advantage that it is usually allowed to delve a bit deeper. And that is a great privilege.